Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm honored to have Frederick Taylor on the podcast. Hey, Frederick.
How are you, my friend?
I am very good. All right, I'm going to give Frederick a quick introduction, and then he's going to jump right in and answer the Discover Indie Film 4 questions, which are favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. So I'll just jump into the introduction. Frederick made an amazing film called Pre-Existing Freedom, which was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021. It was short film documentary, but it's a documentary meets performance art piece, wonderfully edited, wonderfully put together, pretty much all made by you, one man.
All made by me.
All made by you, one man. One man band. During COVID, and took home the award for outstanding performance by an individual in a documentary, which I was so happy. Little background story is you, Frederick happened to be in LA and I got to meet you in person when I handed over the trophy to you. That was a lot of fun.
That was terrific. I was so happy that it went down that way.
Yeah. Better than dropping it in the mail, I think.
I think so. That was cool. Yeah. Face with a name. Film festival with a face.
That's true. It is nice to, especially after a year and a half or two.
A year and a half of isolation. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to watch Pre-Existing Freedom, in January, you can go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film, and there is a TV series that was born out of this podcast, and you can see Pre-Existing Freedom as part of season 7. All right, that I will shut up now about the introduction and just ask you the question. Do you want to name some of your favorite films?
I would love to. I'm a big classic film person. So I love Alfred Hitchcock. So, you know, there are a certain number of Alfred Hitchcock films that I just am taken by, Vertigo being one, Psycho being another as well. I love Orson Welles, you know, Citizen Kane is one of my favorite films of all time as well. So I love auteurs. I just love great filmmakers that make great film. You know, Scorsese is another favorite filmmaker because he's just such an incredibly talented and gifted filmmaker. Spike Lee is one of my favorite filmmakers of all time as well. Do the Right Thing for me is just for me in my generation was one of the greatest rite of passage films I ever saw. John Hughes, I thought had a great run with films. I mean, like, you know, anytime Ferris Bueller's Day Off, it doesn't matter where it is in the film, I'll just stop and I'll just watch it until the end as well. So those are some of the films that I really like. I mean, I went through a phase where I really loved Penny Marshall, which he had a great run. I mean, Big is one of my favorite films of all time. As well, my favorite era in Hollywood is pretty much that 65 to 85 run, that 20 years in there. I think it's the greatest time in the history of Hollywood when Hollywood was really what it could be. It was riding on its full potential of great entertainment and great film art and being provocative and socially relevant as well. So I love that, and inclusive too. It's not that I don't like some of the other previous eras in Hollywood better, but the problem was that, you know, it gets a little weird in there because it's not including enough people. You know, Poitier in the 60s really helped to usher in the construct of the diverse leading man as well. So, and then of course, by, you know, you get to the 80s, that's solidified and packaged into this other actor that we still know and love is Denzel Washington as well. I mean, he's so much of an extension of Poitier as well. So I love, you know, I really love meaningful films. And in that swath, you know, the Bruce Lee films are in there as well. And there are some tremendous films done by many great actors of many different backgrounds. as well. I mean, Anthony Quinn is one of my favorite actors of all time. He's Mexican American. You know, and then, you know, Brando, I can always do anything. Brando is what it's sad. You know what I mean? Like, for whatever reason, I will watch him do anything at any time. And you know, people say, oh, he's a terrible actor. And I'm like, I can't tell. I just, only thing I know is that I'm moved by whatever he's doing. And I'm, you know, I'm not even sure why. And I'm not even questioning it. I'm just going along with it. I recently rewatched Last Tango in Paris. Captivated. And I'm just like, why am I so drawn in to this guy and what he does? And of course, you know, the height of De Niro is in that era as well. You know, the films, you know, Raging Bull and Taxi Driver. I mean, they're phenomenal films. So that was the great run of Spielberg. As well, Jaws is still, you know, one of the best, you know, sort of sea-bearing horror movies of all time, without question. I mean, even E.T. is one of the greatest kids movies of all time too. The original Star Wars movies was in that time period. You know, I love the first Rocky film. Then there are films like, you know, Peter Finch and Faye Dunaway in Network is a great film to me, as well. Love Story with Ryan O'Neal is a great film. You know, Tatum O'Neal and Ryan O'Neal in Paper Moon is a great film. I mean, I love the movie version of The Wiz as well. You know, that sequence of you know, Ease On Down the Road with Michael Jackson and Diana Ross, that's just awesome. You know, and you're getting the first taste of grown up Michael Jackson, you know, the Michael Jackson we know, the Thriller Michael Jackson guy. He first appears in that film playing the Scarecrow, and you would have thought no one could play that role better than what it was played originally. And, you know, he does. He blows it away, and I think that that's awesome. It's unfortunate that Michael Jackson didn't make more of a career in musical theater and musical films and things like that. But he was doing really well recording albums, so it's not like it came up as a topic of discussion.
But if anything, you know, the massive success that came 5 years later
was ridiculous.
Caused him like, harm.
You couldn't. I think it caused him a tremendous amount of harm. And I would put Prince into that category as well. Too much fame, too much, too soon, too early in high volumes is, you know, it's toxic. You know, we can get into the, you know, the Hendrix and the Morrisons and the Joplins and the Winehouses and the Cobains and you know, and it's on my shirt. It's a terror. Hollywood's the greatest thing in the world, and it's the greatest evil that has ever been created known to man. As well, you have to handle it expertly in order to survive. So, you know, those are some of my favorite films, and that specifically my favorite era. Some of my sort of favorite quietly private films that I watched during that era that I'm ashamed to tell people that I love. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I think the performance by Ricardo Montalban as Khan is one of the greatest villains ever of all time in a space action film. I'm mesmerized by that performance. I don't know where that comes from, but it's just pure genius that this evil Latino man is running around the galaxy, ruining everybody's day. Like, it's incredible. Another one is Superman II, the original Christopher Reeves, you know, canon of Superman's. You know, Superman gives up his powers for the love of Lois Lane, and, you know, the world goes to hell in a handbasket, and he's got to give up Lois and go back and be Superman. I thought that film was extraordinarily profound. That film really meant something and touched me at that particular time. The Empire Strikes Back is another film as well. And like I said, the first Rocky is a you know, stem to stern. It's a phenomenal piece of work as well. There's a Michael Douglas film, Coma, from the 70s as well that I thought was compelling and very well done as well, and I found it to be extraordinary. Superfly is probably my favorite blaxploitation film of all time. I think Superfly is better than Shaft as a movie, and I also think the soundtrack to Superfly is better than the soundtrack to Shaft, with all due respect to Isaac Hayes, you know. But Curtis Mayfield,
just because it's better doesn't mean Shaft isn't great. It just means
Shaft isn't great, exactly. Yeah. Because I love me some, you know, Isaac Hayes, but Curtis, I mean, that album, Superfly, oh my god, wall to wall genius. They're like, this is how you make a soundtrack to a movie. Curtis Mayfield, kaboom, mind-blowing kind of stuff. You know, another quiet private thing I don't share with people, Mahogany with Diana Ross and Anthony Psycho Perkins, who plays the villain in that, you know, her love interest. You know, it's a love triangle between Diana Ross, Anthony Perkins, and Billy Dee Williams. You can't get away with that in any other era but the 70s. No one would ever do that now. It would never happen, you know? But it's such a great, it's a great film. Film.
I have to share that the era you're pointing out, and especially the Rocky inclusion, I love that because it's the era where the studio system got destroyed when they, I think it was like around 65 that they told the studios, you can't own the theaters anymore. You've got to, theaters have to become independent of the studio. So you can't just make something and put it on your own screen, which of course what Netflix and Amazon do now. But so, and then it broke the studio system. And then from like 65 to 75, 80, the artists took over.
Completely.
And you got auteur films like you're naming. Mm-hmm. And Rocky is such a wonderful example because it was such a wonderful film.
Yeah.
And then you look at the series of sequels that followed it, and it kind of perfectly describes how Hollywood
cannibalized everything. Sure. Yeah, exactly. You know, and you could smell it coming, like, you know, with Flashdance and Footloose and, you know, here, you know, Hollywood was coming back in to try to take hold and control of independent cinema.
Well, they looked at the record sales of Superfly and Shaft probably and said, okay, now every movie you put out must have a hit song, must have a pretty couple, must have, like, it became, the formulas came back. But for a good 10, 15 years, the formulas were broken and created. Yeah.
Right. And then it bred the modern era of Hollywood, which is the, you know, the Sean Penns, the Tom Cruises, stuff like that, you know, and these corpses are still walking around now making films. you know, that's Hollywood, you know, and so hopefully this spirit of independent cinema will come back. That is one of my goals as a filmmaker, is to be a part of that wave. I do believe in creative, entertaining, independent cinema. You know, Easy Rider is another one you can throw into that, you know, zeitgeist of films as well as just some incredible. The original Omen series. I mean, the first Omen film, you know, it's terrifying. The Exorcist series, the first,
Even horror was, you watch The Exorcist and it's an art film. The first 20 minutes, 30 minutes are, there's archaeological digs. It's they're beautiful films.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. The reincarnation of Peter Proud. I mean, the movie just gives me chills all the time, you know, someone coming back in someone else's life. I mean, it's crazy, you know, with the same love interest in Margot Kidder. I mean, just great stuff. And then, you know, that was the great era of, you know, the rise of a lot of the Black artists, in particular, someone like Richard Pryor as well. Like, Stir Crazy is still one of my favorite. I mean, you know, Pryor and Wilder, directed by Sidney Poitier, in Stir Crazy, just literally one of the funniest films ever of all time. You know, just, I don't think there are two comedians that could go in now and reproduce that, you know? And you know, the difference between the comedians then and now is that they could compartmentalize their apathy or their bitterness and resentment for a society and go do a performance. Now they can't. These comedians can't do it. They can't get off stage. They can't get off stage, which is...
And they don't have the acting training. Right.
They don't have like, the actor.
Pryor is so underrated as an actor.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And Wilder was, of course, a genius. When they keep throwing buddy comedies together, and it's, you know, someone who's just used to delivering preset jokes on stage, and there's not nuance to it. Hopefully. Every once in a while, someone comes out of SNL and impresses me, like a Bill Hader or someone like that.
Right. But then they don't know what to do with them. They go like, okay, you see it. It pops at you. And then you're like, oh my God, they can really do something with this guy. And then he just flounders around and gets a little older. And then everything changes on you.
And then they just have to do something special on HBO. Like
exactly.
Instead of being a big movie star. Yeah.
Yeah, Hader should work around with him. He's Bill Murray, essentially, in a lot of ways. You know, Bill Murray was that way. And then, of course, Bill Murray's from that same era as well, in that same era that we're talking about, too. Belushi is as well, you know.
Yeah, and they both did a lot of comedy, but they stepped into drama and they did some artistic films.
Exactly. I mean, I still think Neighbors is, you know, I love that film. I mean, it's weird and it is bizarre, but it speaks to me more now than ever as far as the suburbs are concerned. People in the suburbs are scary.
Absolutely.
I've been to your neighborhood. I've literally been to your neighborhood, gone to your house. I know people in your neighborhood. I've been in and out of that neighborhood. I've been into several people's houses there. I've been to parties in your neighborhood. There are people in your neighborhood that are really cool, and then there are people in your neighborhood that are really weird, that are like, they're disturbing. And I get a little bit uncomfortable sometimes with some people that live in your neighborhood. I don't understand them. They're just weird people that just live on that hill. And they never leave that hill. They go to that that Trader Joe's down at the end of the street by, you know, Sepulveda and then Ventura, and then they go right back up the hill again.
Yeah, for those who don't know, we're talking about the hills of Sherman Oaks.
Yes.
That are, I'm just very lucky to live here. We just won the lot. We didn't literally win the lottery, but when we were driving up the hill to get this house and look at it, it was an open house right before the market went crazy. Mm-hmm. I was like, we can afford there? But anyway, so question number two of this, I said this, we were going to do four questions, so we did a nice run of wonderful films. So everyone has a feel for what your favorites are. Now we'll just look for one film that is a film you feel is underrated.
By Jean-Luc Godard. And it is called, made in 1966. It's called Masculine and Feminine. Masculine and Feminine, Jean-Luc Godard, 1966. It is a film that is made piecemeal. It is 15 separate vignettes strung together to make an entire film that focuses on the relationships between, or the construct, have you, between masculine and feminine. And it's fascinating, and it's made in 1966, and it's got things in it where a guy walks into a bathroom and opens up a bathroom stall, and there are two guys making out. And it's 1966, right? Which in America in 1966, that scene cannot be shot. It cannot. It is illegal to shoot that shot.
It's illegal to probably have it projected.
Exactly. You couldn't, in certain states, you couldn't even film it. And even if you shot it and you filmed it in certain states and you showed it, you screened it in Alabama, you'd get arrested in 1966 to do that. You know, it'd be considered porn, essentially, indecent. But in Francais, it's all good. You know,
wonderful. And I haven't seen it, so now I've heard
go,
it.
I recommend it. You should go see it. It's very good, and you see so much Tarantino in it. It just makes your head hurt. You're just he's going to choke Quentin out. I'm like, oh, you got it from this film. Oh, you've been stealing Godard the whole time. You've been fooling us. We thought it was all this other stuff. No, it's just Godard, you know. That's pretty awesome as well. I loved that film, and it's extraordinarily underrated, and nobody talks about it at all. It's not discussed in film studies or anything. It's just completely overlooked, but it's a textbook. How do you make an independent film interesting and you have no money? That's the film.
Wonderful. All right. I gotta get that in front of my eyes. All right. So
yes,
question three is, and I am looking forward to it, a film that's overrated.
Oh, that's just ridiculous that people need to really stop making such a big deal about. It's a tie. And they're more modern, to tell you the truth. A lot of the films that you would consider to be overrated in the past, as time goes on, they age into a space of respectability. You know, it's like I considered for a long time Gone with the Wind to be an overrated film. And now I consider it to be a timepiece, a time capsule, not of the antebellum South, but of the attitudes of the early half of the 20th century.
When right, like it captures the 1930s, what they absolutely their own history.
When you look at it as metaphor for the 30s, you're like, oh, I get it. I'm looking at this from a completely different perspective. Don't try to compare this to the 1860s. Look at this as a passion play of the 1930s. That's the social hierarchy that's being acted out, not the 1860s. Because the 1930s, women have had the right to vote for just, you know, a little over 10 years, you know, work on 39 is the film, almost 20 years. And you know, women are getting lippy. They're talking back. Wait a minute. They got too much power. All this other stuff. That, you know, Olivia de Havilland and Clark Gable, that's all about the 30s, that clash. You know, and then this Hattie McDaniel thing isn't about this mammy on the plantation. It's the stunted growth of the African-American woman who's doing a lot and contributing on a very high level in society and maintaining the homes of the elite in America, but not really getting any credit for it, but seeing the value in everything around her in spite of all of this, you know, BS that's going on. And the Civil War, it's not really about the Civil War. It's really about these world wars that we had just come out of one and we were just, you know, backing our ass into the second one at that particular time. It was our anxiety about war and our fear of losing and what would happen and who really is and is not the enemy, you know. And so that film for me for a long time was overrated. And now I think that that film is worthy of critical study as well. I've changed my position on it. Now, two films that I think possibly as time goes on can move into that same space. It's Titanic and it's Avatar, the first Avatar, that I think right now they're overrated. And you know how I know they're overrated? Top Gun has eclipsed them in ticket sales. Top Gun 2, Maverick, has sold more tickets than those two movies. So that lets you know something weird's going on there, that they're not really that great movies, you know. But I think over time, you know, when we're horribly old, you know, people will start to say, wait a minute, Titanic really does, it's really talking about the 90s and who we were as a society and a culture and our hierarchies and who we put on pedestals and who those two characters, Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio, represented. Because at the end of the day, who dies? The guy dies. and the woman goes on to live. And so, and it's that transition point where, you know, women are overtaking men in society. It's obvious to, for any intellectual. And I think that's what you're looking at, that visceral moment. I mean, he doesn't get on the raft. He gives it to her, and then he just sinks to the bottom of the ocean, never to be heard from again. And then Avatar is a representation of, it's so much of it is like what our intent was in the early 2000s, you know, to try to honor everybody, but we failed miserably at it, obviously, because we're in the place we are now. That's what Avatar is. You know, Avatar is this attempt to be able to, in one movie, give a nod to all of these indigenous people. The only thing missing from Avatar is that the blue people on this other planet don't have a Torah.
For sure. Well,
exactly. If they had a Torah, if there was a guy with a Torah.
Good intentions. But I'm torn on that film because the story of the paraplegic soldier who then lives a full life through virtual reality, mm-hmm. I find compelling. But Cameron.
All the other stuff kind of falls flat
and doesn't hold up over time. And the anti-corporatism is. And what was it? I mean, I know unobtainium was actually a real term that mm-hmm. meant like something precious you can't obtain. Mm-hmm. But it was so silly to say we're mining unobtainium. I mean, come on.
Exactly. It's stupid. But someday it might, you know, as this, the rest of, you know, what we're living through plays itself out, it could eventually find its way into some sort of intellectual discourse as a film that is worthy of our time to review and to dissect and discuss. Like right now, I could do a masterclass on Gone with the Wind and its relationship to society in the 30s. I could do that. We need more time before we can discuss Titanic. You know, the performance of Billy Zane in Titanic, good Lord. Avatar. But someday I think we will be able to, because it is, it's the Zane, you know, Zane pretends like, you know, I have a child, rips the child out of someone else. You know, it's just this, you know, that it again, it's this weird idea about the evils of society and the me first attitudes, and it's the metaphor of it hitting an iceberg, even though everybody says this boat can never sink, and they're like, hey, there's an iceberg, eh, don't worry about it, and all that, you know, all that stuff. We haven't lived long enough yet to really play all of that out, because we don't know how to save ourselves. Our children are still being assaulted in this society. But I think over time, we will be able to come to a better understanding about Titanic and Avatar. It's funny that they're both made by the same dude.
Yeah, who, again, I use the term well-intent, and he's certainly super talented in so many ways.
Amazingly talented.
Yeah.
But the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how much talent you have. You have to be focused as an artist and
include the thoughts of others.
I feel like mentioning that,
you know, in spite of everything he's done, like, and what he was trying to do with Avatar, you know, the female lead had to be blue. she couldn't be an underrepresented person as a human.
Right. Why couldn't they go to another planet and go, oh, surprise, surprise, they're Nigerian?
Yeah, whatever.
Which may be closer to the truth. We're going to get a, like, origin of man, all this other stuff. It's just like hieroglyphics or whatever. Like, it's, you know, if I was going to make that movie, it would be they go to this other planet and everybody looks like Wesley Snipes.
And I believe our dear friends at Marvel made the same actress green.
Exactly. The same actress. Because exactly. They just have these anxieties. And like I said, they would have a Torah. I would give them a Torah.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of just having them plug their hair braids into trees.
Exactly.
Yeah. Words define us. All right. Well, for the last, and by the way, you've already covered this, but the last question is a lesser known film that people should seek out. And you've already named quite a few. By the way, I don't want to derail you from this answering this question, but I've never seen Gone with the Wind. I kind of avoided it by principle.
Well, exactly. Well, of course you did. Of course you avoided it.
Should I give it a try someday?
Yes, you got to give it a try. And this is how you should give it a try. This is the best way to watch Gone with the Wind, right? Intercontinental flight. It's 4 hours. It's perfect. Perfect. Next time you got to go, you know.
Throw it on a laptop.
Oh, yeah. And it's sometimes, it's usually in the queue on those international flights. It's great. On a plane, it's great.
Okay.
Because you're suspended anyway. You can't do anything. And then you're actually able to be totally absorbed into it. You're not distracted at all. You've got headphones on. You know, you're good. You got 4 hours to kill. It'll get you from LA to Hawaii or to Japan or something, or, you know, you can do it in a flight to New York or New York to London or something like that. And then you're like, oh, this is cool. I like it.
Excellent. I'm cool
with it. Yeah.
All right, watch it on a plane.
Exactly. Gone with the Wind on a plane. Not to be confused with snakes on a plane.
I have a terrible fear of snakes, so I have not seen
and
that.
And you though. Don't want them on a plane. I would be really upset too.
Yeah, for sure. All right, would you want to give a lesser known to seek out?
Yeah. I think, you know, something that's lesser known, I would say anything that comes from the African diaspora. It's not one specific film. It's a specific culture. And I'm going to say in this particular case today, it's African culture. Go watch a film, a great film from Senegal or something like that, where, you know, they focus a lot on social order and things like that and colonialism and the complexity of all of that. I would encourage someone to just go seek out an African film. Just type in African films 1960s and go down and look at them, read them, and then pick one that you like. You know, something like that. You know, something indigenous to Africa. People are asleep at the wheel a lot on Africa when it comes to cinema. And they've been making films since the inception of cinema, like everybody else, and they tell stories through their eyes and their gaze. And you can tell it's coming because on Netflix now, you go through your queue and you're like, where'd that Nigerian film come? This is Nigerian, this Nigerian. Here it comes. And the African film industry is no joke. And they've got their own way of telling story. And I'm really trying to encourage people to focus in on that. Don't focus on one film that is obscure. Focus on an entire cultural group that has been ignored in cinema and start to explore their muse and their voice.
I'm going to be self-promoting for a moment. I'm going to sell myself out and say, if you want to seek out a wonderful film at our festival in June, Filmvasion Los Angeles, the winner for Best Feature Film Drama was from Kenya, and it was called Strangers, and it is an amazing film.
There you go.
About
that's my point. That's my point.
Completely made in Kenya.
Unbelievable. The stories that they tell are crazy, from like family dramas to voodoo. And you're like, what is this?
And you by know? The way, addressing what people might think, technically perfect.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
There's no, done. You would expertly think it's Hollywood, but it's coming out of Kenya.
Yeah. And they're no joke. They're not messing around. They know what the bleep they're doing, and they are going to get it. They are going to really kind of come up and start to compete with the rest of the world as far as capturing the imagination of viewers. And in this world of streaming, everybody's at home watching it anyway, so they don't care that it's from Kenya. They just want to
be people have gotten used to embracing Korean film. So,
oh, yeah.
Streaming made that happen. I think COVID made that happen. There weren't any English films, so all of a sudden they started giving us tons of Korean. And it works.
Great
stories. It'd be great.
Great stories. Because, you know, American stories, they get a little boring. You know, Again, with all due respect to Tom Cruise, and, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath for, you know, Mission Impossible in July of next year. They showed me that trailer while they're trying to jam Maverick down my throat. That's the game America plays with you. And I'm like, I'm over that. I went through that as a kid. I don't want that now. Give me a good film. I want a good film, you know, with no bells and whistles and pretensions. Just give me a good film. Great story. I don't need the stars either. Just make it expertly done. That's all I want.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm gonna wrap it up so we can move on. But for those of you who want to see Frederick's work, you just heard how well informed this intellectual person is. A whole cinematic history we just got. I tell you, you went from 39 to 22.
There you go.
I guess you got to add the 1939 to 2022.
Yes. These days,
yeah. The breadth of cinema is actually a wonderful thing. So Frederick's websites and social media URL will be in the show notes for this. You'll just be able to click and it'll take you right over. And if you want to learn more about this podcast or the TV series that was born from it, that'll have Frederick's film, Pre-Existing Freedom, go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film. It should pop up. Enjoy. There's 6 seasons. Actually, it'll be in season 7 in January of 2023. And if you want to learn about the podcast and TV series, you can always go to discoverindiefilm.com, and it's at DIFWINS on Amazon on social media. And I met Frederick because Pre-Existing Freedom played at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year. We hold that every November, so you can learn about it at shermanoaksff.com, and it's at shermanoaksff on social media. And the sister festival to Sherman Oaks, it's Film Invasion Los Angeles, and you can learn about it at filminvasionla.com, and it's at filminvasionla on social media. The .coms and whatnot for Frederick are tomorrowpictures.com and fr3der1ck.com. But those, like I said, those will be linked, so you don't have to worry about typos. Thank you, Frederick. It was an honor.
Yes, this is terrific. I have one other site that's a curated site of all the stuff I like. Since we talked about stuff that I like, you can go see some of the films that I've discussed or brought up in conversation here at tomorrowpictures.tv.
Oh, tomorrowpictures.tv. So you've got .com and .tv.
Yeah. And masculine and feminine is up there on tomorrowpictures.tv as well. So I curate a lot of my own original work, and then I curate other things that I think people should see. So that film, Masculine and Feminine, by Jean-Luc Godard is there as well.
Fantastic. All right. Yep. Well, it was a pleasure.
Always. This is awesome. I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah. And I want to thank Frederick, and I want to thank everyone who's listening.
You got it.